What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew Steinwald, and this is Zima Red. On this show, we speak with the users, founders, and creatives that are diving into the world of unique digital assets, also called non-fungible tokens.
Andrew Steinwald is the managing partner of Sifirmion, an investment firm focused on the NFT ecosystem. All opinions expressed by Andrew and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Sifirmion. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Sifirmion or related entities may maintain positions in the assets discussed in this podcast.
My guest today is Pat Doyle. Pat is the co-founder of Pink Swan Trading, which is a crypto data analytics company. Us in the NFT space know them as the creators of DGen Data, which is a platform for tons of NFT data insights. Pat has a super interesting story. Previously, he was in the world of healthcare data science before making the dive into crypto. We also discuss some incredible stories about how data has helped him and others make great NFT investment decisions. Another interesting part of our conversation revolves around crypto options. Pat is very knowledgeable about this arena because another one of their company's products is Genesis Volatility, which is an institutional crypto options analytics platform. So if you want to learn how NFT data can impact investing, how crypto options work, and how these worlds are likely to collide, then you can't miss this one. Please enjoy my conversation with Pat Doyle. Pat, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to chat with you. And to get us started, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Stoked to be here. So my background kind of from the technical side of the world and the things that got me interested. My background by trade is a data scientist, all things kind of technical in the crypto space. Between like the data availability and all these things got me really stoked on like all the opportunities that this public data financial system kind of shares. So I was data science in healthcare for a while. Then a friend of mine mentioned crypto to me back in 2015, 2016. And I started looking at it from kind of like an analytics perspective and diving deeper and doing a bunch of research. And I kind of continued to develop and build out kind of the data science stack in the crypto world. But traditionally, you know, in the healthcare side, it's a lot slower moving. And so I think as I transitioned and got into the crypto space, we started to feel like you just can't keep up. So it's been a really cool combination to kind of mirror like data skills with crypto and like the world's biggest public data set to play around with. So that's kind of my background from that standpoint. But I've been investing and building in crypto since I got in, so 2016. I ran a team of data scientists at an on-chain analytics company back in 2018, 2019. And then in 2020, my business partner and I, Greg, launched Pink Swan Trading, which is a crypto analytics product company.
Amazing. Okay, so you were a data scientist at a healthcare company and you learned about crypto. What was your initial attraction to crypto? Were you thinking like, oh, this is really cool, there's like internet money and that's like a really novel kind of idea? Or were you looking at it mainly from the data science perspective of, wow, there's this literally global uncensorable ledger that anyone can access and it just absolutely ripe with amazing kind of data insights?
Yeah, it was kind of a combination of both. I kind of missed, you know, learning about Bitcoin early on. And when I was introduced, it was to Ethereum. And so from like the technical standpoint, the ability to build new systems was really interesting. And then from like kind of layering in my, you know, data science skills, I was like, wow, like I can literally see financial transactions occurring in a global financial ecosystem and I can start to understand how people are doing things. So there's the two sides of it. And I think from the standpoint of like being in control and owning, you know, like owning your assets and having that control is a really interesting, like a really interesting component of it that pulled me into it.
That's awesome. Okay, so you had a kind of a deep interest in crypto and blockchains, and then you joined an on-chain analytics firm, you said in 2017, 18, right?
I was 2018, 2019.
2018, 2019. And then after that, then you started Pink Swan Trading?
Correct.
So yeah, tell me more about Pink Swan Trading. Like what is that?
Yeah, so Pink Swan Trading is basically a crypto data lab. That's kind of how we view it, where we see the need for a lot of picks and shovels to be built in the crypto space to drive adoption, to drive insights, to make, you know, smart investment decisions. So PinkSwan Trading is kind of like our holding company, and under our holding company, we run a couple of data brands. So one of them is called Genesis Volatility, and that is catered towards highly sophisticated options traders. So we built, you know, tools for option volatility trading. And then the other product is focused specifically on NFT trading, you know, analyzing trade trends over time, floor price movement, wallets accumulating, things like that. And so PinkSwan kind of is the umbrella that holds each of the data verticals products that we build on.
Very cool. Okay. So, and you mentioned that your co-founder is Greg. So I think I first met you guys back, I want to say it was 2019, I believe, but it could have been, yeah, it was 2019, 2020. I forget exactly when, but yeah, when I met you guys, I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are absolute geniuses. But so how did you meet Greg initially? And what was the conversation like where you guys were kind of, you know, you met each other and after X amount of time, you're like, hey, we should start our own kind of, you know, kind of project here. What was that like?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty funny the way we met. So he and I, Greg grew up in California and I grew up in Chicago. When he moved to Chicago, he moved out here to trade, and he traded at a couple of firms, Chopper Trading and DRW. And when I met him, we actually both were at a skate park. And so I was skating and he was skating, and he was like, you know, then he just like said something to me and I was like, oh, cool. And we sat down and we chit chatted, and you know, our professional careers came up, and I was in healthcare at the time and he was trading. And so he was like, you know, I don't trade crypto professionally, but I do this on the side. And I was brand new to the space. And so I was like, dude, that sounds so cool. Let's meet up and grab coffee. So in 2015, after we met at the skate park one day, we went and grabbed a coffee, and he literally like walked me through like setting up a MetaMask wallet. And this was actually back in the days where there was like the Mist browser wallet. So like it was like before things got easier to use. So when he introduced me to stuff, like, you know, he was a trader, I was technical. We started doing research every weekend together, like writing white papers. I was like scripting stuff, and we kind of like come to these investment theses together. And so we've always kind of been attached to the hip personally before we decided to launch a company. And so in 2020, Greg's an options trader. I've never seen anyone more excited about options. And when crypto options became a thing, he was like out of his mind. He was like, these are the two coolest assets I could trade. And so he's like, but to do this successfully, like, we need to build some tools, and the market's going to grow. There's no doubt about it, but we need to be building the tools because we have the skill sets to do it. So that's in 2020, we basically sat down and looked at the crypto options market, kind of forecasted what we thought the growth would be, the need for these tools in this space, and, you know, kind of started putting pen to paper and building product in January of 2020.
That is so cool. Yeah. And also I've never heard of anyone meeting their co-founder at the skate park. Like that is legendary.
It's pretty funny. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So, okay. So options. All right. So I am not a trader. I know very little about the options market, whether traditional finance or crypto finance. What, like, tell me about that market, the options market in crypto, and also just like TradFi. Like, tell me about like, what is that like? Just, you know, overall.
Yeah, and the options market can get pretty complex from a trading perspective, but I think for, you know, the concepts of options in general, you know, it's kind of like, you know, an insurance policy. There's kind of different ways to look at it, but at the end of the day, you know, you're making a bet on the future value of a crypto hitting a certain price. And if you're right, you know, you're doing well. If you're wrong, you know, you potentially lose a little bit of money. But in the crypto space, kind of what we saw is large institutions, for the most part, are trading options. And there's kind of like this, and that's kind of in the TradFi world. So like a lot of professional money managers, you know, hedge funds, all have some sort of option book that they're running. And it's like a very institutional product. And so we saw that options in crypto started, you know, as the market started to grow, this was the perfect product to start onboarding more of the institutional investors. And so to onboard them and to get them comfortable with this space, they do need to have access to, you know, proper tools to understand what expiration traders are trading, what strikes traders are trading, you know, how the market is moving and how volatile, you know, some of these options contracts can be. And so those were like, we saw those being like a necessity in the market. And so we started, the reason, you know, to kind of help bridge the gap from, you know, retail only to bringing in more professional institutional money. That was kind of what we were, the kind of the push around our product is to build that, you know, narrow that gap. And because options are inherently, you know, a bit more complex than just trading spot, you know, a big part of our approach is driving education. So we run like YouTube series on how to trade options, how to understand some of the volatility metrics, write, you know, weekly newsletters, so people can kind of get an idea of how to condense all the data that our platforms push out into, you know, here's what the data is telling you. Here's how I can understand what's going on in the market. And so we've kind of seen this gap close from institutional welcome to institutions are here. And it's, for the most part, we see a lot of that activity on the option side.
Awesome. Okay. So can you give me a more kind of a play-by-play of example of something on Genesis Volatility, a data analytics insight into one of these, into an options contract, or I don't even know like what the terminology, but like if I'm a user, what am I looking at, or what am I trying to look at? And then what am I gleaning? Like what insights am I gleaning from those insights?
Yeah. So here's like a really basic example. So, if you're trading options, or you want to make a bet on, you know, let's call it the future price of ETH, you would buy a contract. And so let's say the contract is, that contract has two things. It has an expiration date and a strike price. So if you think, you know, Ethereum is going to be at $10,000 by the end of this year, you can buy an option contract with, you know, a December 31st expiration at a $10,000 strike. And let's say that costs you, I'm not quite sure what the cost of buying that contract would be, but let's call it $100. So if Ethereum is at $10,000 at the time of your expiration, you can exercise that contract, and basically somebody has to deliver you one ETH. And the value of that ETH is $10,000, and you only paid $100 for that contract. So you have a really, you know, that's like the leverage that options give you, is to kind of bet on the future value, either on the up or downside. So one of the things that Genesis Volatility allows you to do from like a really basic example is understand where traders are buying and selling at different strikes and expirations. And so that's an interesting thing, because you can see the metric is kind of measured as called open interest, or the amount of contracts that are outstanding. And that allows you to see, you know, which expirations and strikes traders are kind of placing their bets. And so you can start to build your thesis around, okay, most of the traders are trading the December contract, the strike that they're interested in is this strike. Here's, now I can build my thesis. Do I want to, you know, buy that contract? Do I think, you know, ETH will be at 10,000 by the end of the year? Or do I think that, you know, those traders are on the opposite side and they're shorting that contract? So those are some of like the basic things that you can kind of model around. And then, you know, where it gets interesting is comparing like the option volatility. So where is it trading in relation to, you know, historical volatility, you know, and what, and how are those changing and shifting over time?
Okay. So this might be a silly question, but could someone in the future create option contracts relating to like CryptoPunks, where you say, I think CryptoPunks are going to be, you know, $1 million by 2022. Is that possible? Or do you need more of a much more liquid market in order to have those contracts work effectively?
No, there's absolutely, you can create, I mean, the most liquid markets right now are around Bitcoin and ETH, but there are exotic contracts. You can create a market on just about anything. And we're starting to see kind of the marriage of NFTs and DeFi come closer and closer together. And I do think that you'll start to see an index, you know, like that like a CryptoPunks index that you could trade options on. And I think you've seen that with like Yuma Protocol. I think they have something similar. It's not necessarily options, but it's like a directional derivative that you can trade around the value of punks over the last couple of days.
Awesome. Okay. So when, if I'm betting that punks are going to be at $1 million by 2022, doesn't there have to be someone on the other side saying, no, I disagree with you and kind of take the other side of that?
Correct.
Yeah. Right, so like how do you, I feel like then option contracts themselves must be super illiquid because you have to find both parties, you know, for the exact same kind of thesis, well, opposite theses, you know?
Yeah.
So how is there, I mean, I we're getting kind of sidetracked here, but is there a way to make option contracts themselves more liquid?
Yeah, so I think if you look at like the CeFi options market, there's a reason that they only allow, or you're only trading so many assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum for the most part. That's because, you know, you can create markets and order books with some depth to them and people can get in and out and there's liquidity there. For, you know, more exotic type of options contracts, these would likely not, if you were going to go the CeFi route, it would likely be some sort of OTC trade. Somebody, you know, will quote you a market, they'll do some type of analysis on historical punk volumes, prices, and then, you know, quote you a market. And it's probably very favorable to them if the market's super thin. But I think where the DeFi option world is going, and I think a lot of the, you know, the DeFi protocols in general kind of utilize this automated market maker model or a more pooled model where the liquidity is being quoted, you know, from a pool and not an individual. And I think like that's probably a better catalyst to drive like withdraw liquidity or create different market or DeFi products around NFTs. But you're right, like it right now to create like a CeFi punk options contract or options market would be like extremely illiquid. You likely have to go kind of over the counter.
Yeah, and then also if the market's super illiquid and really thinly traded, then someone can just kind of totally alter the outcome of that contract potentially by, you know, either buying a whole bunch of punks or selling a whole bunch of punks and kind of influencing that price.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Like your pricing model has to be spot on if you're, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, from an on-chain perspective, people have to understand that like because these markets move outside of like a, or they move through a smart contract and there's no, you know, regulatory entity monitoring it or controlling what goes on, those are risks, you know, that could potentially, you know, sway the outcome of what you're looking at.
All right, so can you tell me the types of, I mean, yeah, you can be very general here, but what are the types of entities that are utilizing Genesis volatility? Is it like, you know, crypto degens? Is it like, you know, large institutional hedge funds? Like who's using this product?
Yeah, so it's kind of it kind of spans, you know, each of the groups. I mean, we've got some of the largest crypto hedge funds using the product. The visual layer, like the analytics dashboards that we build, are priced to be retail options interest friendly. So we do have a lot of individual retail traders. I mean, that was kind of me and Greg when we got into this space. We wanted to build it for folks like us who don't have deep pockets, that can't, you know, shell out, you know, a couple grand every month for high end data availability. So that's kind of like the analytics visual layer. But on the API side, you know, a lot of our API clients are hedge funds, you know, bulge bracket banks, things like that, who require kind of more granular data feeds. But we do span kind of both. Our focus has been, you know, we build for the retail, but, you know, make it institutional grade.
Awesome. Okay. So I have another silly question inbound where if like, why can't these hedge funds, these large hedge funds that have deep pockets and maybe a lot of resources, why can't they just collect their own options data? You know, why are they going through a source like you guys?
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a good question. And I think it's one of those things where it's a time and materials thing. There's probably more time and value captured in them actually trading these markets than building out the infrastructure to trade these markets. And that's kind of been our approach, is build the tools and let the users kind of focus on the trading component of it. And that's kind of where we see a lot of the interest is. There's probably some things that they're internalizing, but there's some key components that they don't necessarily need to. And then from the API layer, that's kind of where we think, like, you know, building out exchange connections to every crypto options exchange, normalizing the data to a point where it all makes sense to everybody. That is time consuming and does require a lot of domain expertise. So we're trying to kind of ease that burden.
Okay, yeah, that makes total sense. All right, so can you give me one past example? So there's no kind of issues there, but past example of a insight that someone gained from Genesis volatility, where like it impacted their trading. You know, like, you know, very broad, like, oh, we saw that, you know, everyone was going long, so we shorted and like we made a lot of money, or like so something very basic that I can wrap my head around.
Yeah, I think like a pretty interesting new feature that we just launched is actually comparing the DeFi options market to the CeFi option market. And so, you know, this isn't necessarily somebody who's sitting there saying, I made this trade and it made me $1 million, but understanding where these market, you know, inefficiencies sit, and you could potentially be buying options cheaper on chain versus in CeFi and vice versa. And so one of the things that we think is really important from the GVOL perspective is highlighting, you know, the market inefficiencies, because at the end of the day, highlighting those makes both markets more efficient, makes DeFi more efficient, and it makes CeFi more efficient. So that one of the examples is in the most recent terms of is kind of highlighting where CeFi and DeFi options are trading, and you can see people trading like, you know, extremely out of what a CeFi option contract would be priced. And so they're paying a premium. And then on the inverse, you could see it the other way, like DeFi options, you know, occasionally are cheaper. And so I think those are one of the things, is it's not necessarily like saving, it's not an epic trade that you're putting on, but it's where's the market inefficiencies and where are the opportunities lying.
Awesome. Okay. So now I want to dive into DeGen data. But before doing that, I want to hear about kind of your personal initial interest in the NFT sector. And also, I want to hear about Greg's initial interest in NFTs, because I know Greg is actually was when we were talking, he knew a lot about NFTs. So I'd love to hear just from both of you guys' perspective how you guys got involved in NFTs.
Yeah. So, well, it's actually through you. So thanks. When we last caught up maybe a year or two ago, you were telling me all about NFTs, crypto voxels, crypto punks, and so I started doing a bit of research around it. But at the same time, we were building out Genesis Volatility. So unfortunately, kind of time and material resources didn't allow me to go full in. But it was enough to dabble and understand the space. And then as things started heating up this past year, I revisited kind of what was going on in the space, understanding kind of the market dynamics and how they differ from, you know, spot and how they differ from options. And you know, understanding that it's an entirely different asset class to trade, because that it is. And I think that's one of the things that kind of drew me to it, is this is, you know, kind of the newest thing, and there's definitely some inefficiencies here, and there's things that need to get built to make this stuff more efficient. So my intro was through you, and then Greg actually, he was back in, I want to say, whenever Gods and Chain did their, you know, their initial like sale, he was like all over Gods Unchained, and he was playing it all the time. And so he's been kind of in the NFT space since whenever Gods Unchained launched, and I can't remember when that was.
Awesome. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So I think that Gods Unchained, I want to say it launched it at the end of 2019. I could be totally off with that, but I want to say it was like around there. But that's really cool. I don't know that I was the one who got you interested in NFTs.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. Makes me look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, tell me all about DeGen data, because I feel like Genesis Volatility is this awesome product that's focused on, you know, one area of the market. And then you guys made this other incredible product, which is called DeGen data. Yeah. Like, what is that? And like, why is it exciting?
Yeah. So we started, a friend of mine sent me a link to Hashmasks when that project launched, and that was kind of the first NFT project that I aped into. And I was just, you know, if you don't have skin in the game, it's hard to understand, you know, what's going on. You're less bought in. And so when I participated in Hashmasks, I started like doing a bit more research, pulling some data, building some tools around it, and I realized like this is starting to highlight some of the inefficiencies. And since I don't have access to unlimited capital, I kind of, you know, shared these tools with the general public. So the idea was, you know, kind of spawned out of personal interest and research in a project that I was participating in. And so as I started to do that, I was getting a lot of, you know, requests for different projects, you know, to highlight analytics, to highlight growth, to understand, you know, trade dynamics, how they trade, and things like that. So it kind of organically spawned out of personal interest to product in about a month or two. And so as we did that, we started to look for projects where we saw like strong valued communities behind them and high liquidity. So if you're running like a small mint NFT project or there's just not a lot of trade volume, obviously there won't be enough data on chain to really drive a meaningful narrative around what's going on. And so that was one of the things, like as we got into the space, I figured like while we're building these tools, let's continue to build these out so people can understand what's going on in the market. And at the end of the day, NFTs are relatively illiquid compared to a lot of other assets. And so our thought is by highlighting, you know, data and tools that kind of give people the ability to make more informed trades, that we're also helping drive liquidity to this space. And so that was kind of similar to the Gvol side. It was like, we know this space is going to grow. We're data product people. Let's build a data product for the options traders. We're crypto nerds. We love this stuff. NFTs are super cool and exciting, but I don't want people to get rugged. Let's give them tools to at least help them inform their decision-making a little bit more. And that was kind of, that's kind of been our approach, is give people tools to help them make better informed decisions. And then we can kind of like, you know, curate more and more data to help drive that across different projects.
So was there a specific catalyst that where you guys were like, oh my gosh, like NFTs are taking off, like we need to start, you know, creating this new product for the NFT data, or was it just in general, you guys were like, okay, this is something that's very exciting and we see the long-term prospects of this. You know, like what was that initial, because it's a lot of time and resources that is needed to develop these kind of products. So what was that spark that was like, okay, we need to do this now?
Yeah, so it was pretty much, we looked at the growth in like NFT trade volume and the growth in NFT total transactions. And we just said like, this hasn't slowed down and it's not going to slow down. And I think that's kind of been the thing that we've seen in crypto in general. Like we may hit a bear period, but it's going to be one of these paradigm shifting asset classes that will need these things in the future. And so we were kind of like, look, we've got the expertise, we've got the skills, we've got the data knowledge, we've got the smart contract skills. Let's see this through. Let's start supporting more projects. Let's add some of the higher value, you know, projects like CryptoPunks and Autoglyphs and things like that, because there are strong communities behind it. There is a lot of volume behind it and there is a lot of dollars changing hands. So like, if we can make that decision-making process easier, then that's kind of our goal. If we're driving more liquidity to the space, perfect. That means, you know, if you need to sell a CryptoPunk in a day, here's where you should probably price it. And so those are some of the things we're like, yes, absolutely, we got to go all in on this stuff, because I mean, I think we all kind of see it. Once the cat's out of the bag, you're not getting it back in. And so these things need to continue to grow.
All right. So I mean, on your website, on DGen Data now, it's like you guys got CryptoPunks, all the art block types, Autoglyphs, Mebits, VFriends, Avastars, like just so many different projects. How hard is it to implement integrate a new project onto the platform? Because I feel like, I don't know, sometimes the stuff is kind of neat and it's only traded under like one kind of specific contract, but sometimes it's traded over on OpenSea and Rarible, and then it's over here and over there. Like how hard is it to integrate a new NFT project onto the platform?
It, It's relatively like a quick lift. I think most of the time is spent researching and understanding the project in general. And that's one of the things that's really exciting about this stuff is integrating if we were to integrate all these, you know, analytics across every project in a uniformed matter where all the analytics were the same, like it kind of misses the point, right? Like there's a reason like NFTs are unique assets, because like one NFT, a CryptoPunk can't be compared to a Meebits. It can't be compared to an Autoglyph, because like each of the components that make that NFT differ. So really a lot of the time is understanding the dynamics of the project first before we add it. Like what are the valuable traits? What are the things people looking at? How does like, you know, maybe like the one of the more interesting ones that I've been recently kind of eyeing was Tom Sachs' Rocket Factory. And the dynamics of like composing pieces, and then like those, then they're off market. So like understanding how that could affect secondary market and what metrics are meaningful, that's where we spend most of our time. Once we kind of have a general idea, then we'll start pulling in all the metadata and all the on-chain data, since, you know, it's all there and it's relatively easy for us to parse through. That's, you know, then it goes to building time. But we do like to spend like time on the research side of figuring out how does all this stuff work together? What's important? What traits do we need to highlight? How does different traits affect each other and things like that?
So when you're doing that research, is it like just a very manual process of kind of, you know, going to different websites and talking to people and just reading? Or is it a very data-driven process where you're like, all right, we looked at, you know, all the Chromie squiggles and, you know, we know that these traits are the best based off this data, blah, blah. Like is it very quantitative approach or very qualitative?
It's more on the qualitative side, because I think that's like the understanding of what people value and the way that they value it is important. Because if we're just going to drive, you know, here's sales, that's definitely helpful and it gives you good direction. But if the community is like, these three things make something valuable to us, then we want to highlight how we pull those three things out and like annotate the data to highlight that. But then once we kind of have that piece, you know, it's not like you build it and you ship it and you forget. Like these communities evolve and things that were once valuable change into something different. And so, you know, we want to remain nimble enough that we can kind of maintain, you know, new feature requests, you know, new kind of trade distributions and things like that.
All right, so what is the difference in kind of users comparative to Genesis volatility and DGEN data? Because I mean, you guys probably have some insights on to, I don't know, just the very high level overview of what users are doing on these websites. So have you noticed anything interesting when you're looking at the difference in the users of these two platforms or products?
Yeah, I think it's just two totally different market classes. Like options volatility trading is a very complex product. So it's like extremely niche but if you're an options trader, like this stuff is a necessity. And I think from like the NFT side, and I think this is one of the things that you said, like this is the thing that brings in the masses into crypto. And you're right, like it has been, because the idea of understanding like digital scarcity in a world where people are, you know, more and more digital every day, like there's a lot more people that understand this asset class. So I think those are kind of like the two different buckets, is, you know, professional, you know, options traders and, you know, general retail NFT crypto native people. And I think those are the two different buckets of people that we're seeing kind of adopt these products.
So have you gleaned any kind of cool insights in, or have you heard of anyone kind of getting some cool insights from DGEN data, and also like what would that even like look like? You know, people are kind of combing through and they see, oh wow, like I can buy like these cool CryptoPunks for way cheaper than normal, or like I don't know, give me an example of some sort of direct value that someone has had on DGEN data.
Yeah, one of the things early on when we started doing this was we started integrating Mooncats when that project was rediscovered, and a lot of the community, because, you know, there's like, it's an old project, there's a bunch of this data on chain, a lot of people started like assigning value to older minted cats. And so one of the first things that we did, everyone's like, give us the mint age or give us the distribution of the IDs of all the cats that were minted over time. And so everybody started accumulating kind of like early minted cats. And I think if you look at like the floor price across moon cats from 2017 to 2020, 2021, like I think it's like a 10, 20X like return. But obviously like the market had to like start to realize that. But I think the narrative of like people assigning the values early on and being able to pull that information out and then go purchase them somewhere was one of the ones I thought was pretty interesting.
So do you think that in the future, NFT markets are going to go the way of kind of the, I guess, traditional markets where everything is like more, like, I don't want to say, yeah, I guess it's like more professionalized, more more quantitative, you know, data science and all that kind of stuff. Or do you think that the market will kind of continue to be more retail heavy and more, more like, I guess, quote unquote, basic, just by virtue of this asset class being like gaming, art, collectibles, like these fun user-friendly things?
Yeah, I think for the most part, like it doesn't necessarily need to be overly complicated. You know, I think that there's a reason people like to track floor price over time, because that's really the metric you need to know for the health of a project. Like art, if you're looking at it from like a purely collector standpoint, and you like the art, maybe that stuff's irrelevant. But if you're looking at it from like, you know, the accumulation of value, or are these projects going to be sustainable over time? You know, those are some of the things. It's like a longer term thesis rather than like, okay, can I get in and out of these positions? And I think the easier and the more simple you can keep some of the analytics, it helps people curate that narrative around like, okay, this project was OG, it's got a lot of trading volume, the floor seems to be rising consistently, I can see who are the biggest buyers of this asset. And I know, you know, for example, Vincent Van Gogh has been, you know, accumulating these projects. So like you can start to piece together like each of these single data pieces to a thesis that says, okay, this is likely to have, you know, a longer term, you know, life cycle than another project. And those are some of the things that like, it doesn't need to get overly complicated to make these decisions. I think internally we look at a lot of cool things that are like, it might be like too much to add, or we're not quite sure like how it's useful, but I think there's things that you could definitely kind of make more sophisticated, but I think at the expense of losing interest and losing like the narrative that you can build around like the simplicity of it, I think that's where most of the people are interested in kind of seeing the data from that perspective.
All right, so how do you see DeGen data evolving in the future? Like where do you see it going besides providing these analytics into the different NFT projects?
Yeah, so ultimately what we think is like really interesting, and we're starting to see it now with platforms like NFTX and Fractionalized and NFT20, is like the marriage of NFTs and DeFi. And what we think is really interesting is we see people starting to collateralize loans. They're collateralized NFTs for loans, so they could, you know, participate in different NFT drops or things like that. And what we think is there's a really unique opportunity to build out kind of like a pricing appraisal oracle service where you can kind of input your NFT project, and based on, you know, our experience with on-chain data, pricing historical trades, we can start to build a model that'll give us a fair market valuation. Obviously, you know, it would be like an over collateralized valuation, but we think that's like a really interesting and key component to unlocking liquidity in the NFT space. Because right now, a lot of the projects that are working on that, I think they could benefit from some sort of pricing oracle or some sort of pricing model that you could feed in and say, you know, the floor price, and you can generalize like what that appraisal ends up looking like. It wouldn't be, you know, these three features are always this. It would be something that would be a combination of many things. Like, here's where the floor price has been. This one has X, Y, and Z, you know, kind of like rarity traits, the community growth, and Discord users, like membership is growing at a rate of these things. And I think those can all be valued into what an NFT could be appraised for, and then ultimately collateralized for some sort of loan.
That's super cool. Yeah, I feel like valuation or like pricing of NFTs is like the holy grail. Like, so many people are trying to figure out how do we, what is the fair market value of these NFTs, right? And I feel like with something like art, it's really, really difficult because it's like art is itself is highly subjective. But there's a lot of assets like the collectibles, for example, where there's, you know, there's like, you know, X amount of number of them. There's differing rarities. The rarities are like this common or whatever. I feel like that gives you a nice kind of data set or a nice kind of contained environment to be able to look at stuff. Will most of these be based off of like real estate in a sense where it's a lot of it is like comparable sales?
So it's almost like we're kind of like looking at it from like the Zestimate standpoint. Like when you go to Zillow, you see your house up there and it tells you what they think it's valued on based on what their model is telling them. It doesn't mean that's what you're going to sell it for. It doesn't mean that that's what you take out a loan against, but you have some value based on how the market's trading. And so that's, you know, from the example of Punks, I think a lot of the platforms that I've seen are like, okay, a portfolio is based on what you pay for your Punk. Or at least in like some of the apps that I've seen, it's like, you paid this, so your Punk's worth this. And so, but that's not true anymore, you know? Like, so what's the fair value of Punks as an asset in my portfolio? That should be based on, you know, what we've seen historically. And if we think, you know, given the, you know, the finality of on-chain data, that is, you know, something that is tangible, quantifiable, and then understanding like how you can drive additional, you know, valuation around kind of like the more subjective things. Like community is like a huge component in a lot of these projects. So how do you like assign some value to the growth of a community or the growth of the total number of holders and things like that? And so I think building unique models around that is going to be really interesting. One, from like a, you know, personal interest is really interesting, but then two, from the ability to like unlock liquidity in the broader crypto space where NFTs and DeFi start meeting is going to be really cool as well.
That's awesome. All right, well, I want to switch gears here a little bit, and I want to talk about play to earn. Play to earn is kind of, you know, sweeping across the narrative Twitter, you know, the Twitter sphere, and the narrative has really been strong about just play to earn in general. So I just want to know, like, just very high level, like, what are your general thoughts on play to earn?
Yeah, I think that's a super cool model. I think like it highlights a lot of the fun components of why people get into NFTs, but it also allows you to look at the gaming world and unlock a lot of the value that crypto has unlocked in a lot of different businesses. And so I think from like rewarding users, crypto is very friendly to that. If you look at every DeFi protocol that launches, if you've ever used it, they've probably given you tokens. You know, if you've ever held some asset, you're probably earning something, some other token. And I think like play to earn is unlocking this different market to reward users for like driving value to their platform. And I think that's the thing that gets me excited, is like the business models are shifting away from like user pays for product, but it's like, if both product and users are winning, it's like a very strong, you know, relationship. So I think it's really interesting. And I think like from the Axie standpoint, I wish I've had more time to dive deeper into these, but like, I know that the scholarship program like is unlocking access for like more financial inclusion too. And I think that like, there's so many different dynamics that are at play in these things that it'll be interesting to see where they go. But I think play to earn is definitely the way that stuff is shifting.
I would say that what's happening now is like the paradigm of the internet is going from like value extractive of users to value additive, and that's due to kind of crypto, blockchain and whatnot. But so for something like gaming, that makes sense to me because there's like a loop where it's like, okay, well, you know, acquire this, go kill these monsters, and like, you know, it's kind of like that makes sense to me. But for something like, how can you develop a model that makes sense where there's no, I guess, necessary, like there's not really a loop, so to speak, like, if I'm adding value to Facebook, you know, crypto Facebook, then I should be paid in Facebook coin, right? If I'm like liking, commenting, whatever. If I'm adding value, like if I'm a user of DeGen Data, like how, and I'm literally just off the top of my head here. If I'm adding value to DeGen Data, how is it possible to create an effective play to earn or like engage to earn model there? Or is it just, does it have to be some sort of like game loop in order for that to work?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's one of the things actually we're thinking about, like adding to DeGen is like, if you look at like Zapperfi, for example, they do a really good way of gamifying, you know, like their application. if you show up, if you make so many transactions, or if you just check in every day. And same with like CoinGecko. If you go to their app, you get like these candies. Those candies are redeemable for something in the future. And whether it's crypto or not, I think like the gamifying users is really interesting. So maybe it's not play to earn, but it's play to use, or like, you know, use to earn. And I think that's one of the things that the incentive models to drive value, like every user that comes to our platform should be, you know, they're driving value to us. And so that value should also, you know, they should see some benefit from the value driven to just checking it out, clicking around, finding something. And I think that's one of the things that as we kind of build, you know, product deeper and further, those are a lot of the things that we think integrating will drive really interesting kind of like financial models where both, you know, users and platforms win.
That's super wild. All right. So like, what are your general thoughts on where all this technology is headed? You know, I'm always talking about the metaverse and how, you know, we're all going to be in this virtual environment that people are living, working and playing in. And like, what do you think about this? Like, what do you think about all this cool stuff that is being created that is just so, the business models are so different compared to what's out there today. So like, what is this? Yeah, where are we headed?
Yeah, I think if I look back on my experience in crypto as a whole, the first year or two, I was kind of learning, understanding the space, building conviction, making sure that, you know, what the promise you heard back in 2016 is now being delivered on. And I think now that I've seen those promises of people saying, hey, we're going to build this, and now seeing those products in market and the growth of these products and the user base growing and the adoption waves coming in, I think it's only going to continue going that way. And I think one of the things that's really interesting, like you said, is the business models are changing. You know, like in a metaverse world, if you're a creator and you can sell digital assets in a plot of land that you own, that's a really interesting, you know, market dynamic that changes completely to what things are right now. And I think it's only going to continue going that way. And every time I've made a guess on, you know, oh, this will happen in 5 years, it's always been shorter. Like the timelines for all these things get so compressed. Like every day you get new smart people entering the space, somebody who's super excited about building something. So like the crypto space, I feel like is like a black hole for talent. It just keeps like sucking in people from each, you know, from whatever they drive, you know, interest in. You know, from originally it was from like, you know, decentralized currency where you're the sole owner of it, no one can take it from you, and that drove in, you know, a group. And then you had like Ethereum, and it was like, oh, you can build any financial product in, you know, an uncensorable way. It's pulling in, you know, then you see DeFi grow, and then you saw like the NFT space where it's like collectors, gaming, like everything that you started to see like gets pulled in, and it's like, you know, you have new artists entering the space. So I just think like every new spot, every new, you know, like vertical in the crypto space just pulls talent in. And I think that accelerates the development. And I think like you're spot on, like the metaverse is only going to continue to grow. And I also think with like the growth of the number of people who actually have devices that are connected to the internet, I think, you know, VR will be a really interesting like component of the metaverse. But I think, yeah, like I'm so long crypto, and I think every time I've like reflected to think like this doesn't make sense, that can't happen, I've most of the time been wrong. so that's the way I see it going.
Awesome. All right. So what sector or like niche or whatever you want to call it within crypto or NFTs has got you personally most excited?
Yeah, I mean, if I consider 2021, 2020, if like me falling down the NFT rabbit hole, I'm seeing like the thing that's getting me excited now, I think, are DAOs. I think like you see all these interesting groups just forming on Discords, on Twitters, and like they're actually like implementing and they're like actually executing. And so it's really cool to see kind of the formation of these digital groups that are actually, you know, coming to a decision, executing on it, and driving value to, you know, the participants of those DAOs. And I think like the DAO is the perfect example. It's like the perfect marriage of all these things that are going on. So it's like you have, you know, decentralized currency. You have, you know, a portfolio of capital or a treasury of capital that a DAO has accumulated. And now they've got to like invest behind that. And you start to see them like accumulating high value NFTs. They're implementing things in an NFT or in a DeFi space. They're, you know, participating from angels, like as angel investors. And I think like, I don't know where I heard this or who said it, but it was like, you know, giving a subreddit a bankroll and saying like, go do something. And that's the thing I think is really interesting. And so that's kind of the next vertical that we're starting to explore, is building tooling around the DAO space. We think, you know, that space is just going to continue to grow, and there's going to be picks and shovels that are needed from a data perspective in the DAO world.
That's awesome. That's so cool. All right. So yeah, speaking of the future, what is your grand 5-10 year vision for, you know, all the stuff that you're working on?
Yeah, I think our approach is, I mean, we're crypto native, you know, nerds who geek out about all this stuff. And because we've got a focus on data product, we're going to continue to build and ship data products in the crypto space for, you know, as long as we can. So as we see, you know, kind of our 5-10 year vision from kind of the pink swan perspective, is as we see, you know, new bubbles of communities building and new products and new verticals and new niches in the crypto market kind of sprouting up, is we're going to go out, build products that support the growth of that and grow alongside them. So whether it's, you know, DAOs next or, you know, some other space, just continuing to ship and support the growth of verticals that we believe in. And so that's where I see us going. And I think it plays into our team's strengths and the things that we like to do in general.
That's awesome. Awesome. All right, Pat. Well, this has been amazing, but time to jump into closing questions.
Sure.
All right. What is your favorite video game?
Oh man, that's a good one. I have to say it was probably, I mean, I grew up playing Super Nintendo, so it was probably Legend of Zelda. I played that game for like hours on it.
Oh, gee.
And I could like literally sit down and play it start to finish still.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Awesome. All right. What is your single favorite NFT that you own?
That's a good one. I think it's got to be my CryptoPunk. I bought one that looked like me because I was like, well, if I'm going to get one, I'll have one that looks like me. So it's got to be my punk.
Is it worth like $100 million today?
No, it's not $100 million. Soon. But to me, it is.
Yeah. Love that. All right. What is your most controversial thought relating to crypto or NFTs?
I think from like the NFTs perspective, I personally, I don't know if this is controversial, but I think there's a lot more value in a project at the smart contract level. I think that like projects that innovate contracts are like what push the space forward. So I think like the OpenSea lazy minting is great for artists, but I think where the innovation and stuff is going to drive NFTs forward is all on the smart contract level.
That's super cool. Okay. So like, for example, if your project is, I don't know, on-chain comparative to something that's off-chain, is that like you would consider the on-chain more valuable in that sense, personally?
Yeah, I think it just like allows, it's kind of like it allows for more interoperability. And I think, I also think you can look at things like, I mean, you were the one that turned me on to Taken's Theorem, but they've been doing some pretty interesting stuff around like user input into the art. So like actually directly writing CSS on chain that changes what the NFT looks like. That to me blows my mind. That is so cool.
That's awesome.
And because it's on chain, like you can do that.
Totally. Yeah. Takens is an absolute genius. I don't know how he does it, but he's amazing. All right. If you could snap your fingers and instantly change or improve one thing in the crypto or NFT space, what would it be?
I think it would probably be like the misnomer around what NFTs are. I think that there's a lot of narratives still that people think you're just buying JPEGs. I think like improving and educating people, obviously outside of the, you know, the people who are in this space, I think that's like a missing piece. I was trying to, you know, explain it to my parents the other day, and they're like, why are you not selling these things? This is stupid. And I was like, you don't understand. So they're not going to make it, obviously, but I think that pushing and educating people on the narrative of what these things are and can be is not just digital art, but access, community, you know, composability, all these things. That's what I would change.
I love that. Yeah. And there's a definite like age kind of divide here where, you know, with crypto, I think 2013, 2014, I remember talking to my parents about Bitcoin, and they were like, I don't even know what you're talking about at all. And now they're like, okay, like I kind of get it. Like Bitcoin is like this, you know, money that's not connected to the government, blah, blah, blah. Right. So it took some time, but now they're finally understanding. I feel like it's going to be similar with NFTs and a lot of kind of digital goods in general, where today we're talking about it and they're going to be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And it doesn't make any sense. You should like sell all that. And then in, you know, 5-10 years time, they're going to be like, okay, well, you know, it's starting to make sense to me. Right. But I still think that there is a big kind of age divide there where if you're like above a certain age, I feel like it just immediately turn off for you. You're like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you do that? But yeah,
yeah.
I think it's going to take time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Last question. Where do you see the crypto and NFT ecosystem in 3 years?
So I think where we're seeing it go right now, I think it'll continue to drive this space. So I think that there's like the adoption of the metaverse. I think people are going to start figuring out ways to monetize, you know, like their metaverse content. So I think that's going to be one that just continues to drive. I also think the marriage of NFTs and DeFi is going to become more and more prevalent. And I also think like as you start to see the NFT and DeFi markets kind of like moving closer and closer together, you'll start to see more institutional adoption into the space. And you're starting to see it. I mean, you're starting to see funds allocate, you know, portions of their portfolio to NFTs now. But I think that's just going to continue to drive as well.
Love that. Love that. Pat, well, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for you know, explaining all about your background and telling me all about options and what you built with Genesis Volatility. It's super cool. And especially what you guys are building at DGen Data, that is just super valuable for myself personally. And I'm sure a ton of people also love that. And I'm really looking forward to like what else you guys build. You guys are just constantly putting out cool stuff. So I'm looking forward to like a, I don't know, DGen DAO or whatever you guys call that. That's gonna be awesome.
Actually, we got the name picked out. System of a DAO.
What is it?
System of a DAO.
Oh, System of a DAO. Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
Yeah, I love that. We just gotta build a product around it now. Thanks for having me. I mean, this has been a lot of fun. I mean, talking about crypto, talking about NFTs is always a good time, especially kind of understanding, you know, what people want and how we can build it. That's what we're trying to do.
100%. Yeah. So if people want to find out more about yourself, find out more about Genesis Vault or DGen Data, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter if you're personally interested. It's Doyle126 is my Twitter handle. If you're interested in learning more about NFT analytics or trading in general around the NFT space, you can follow DGen Data on Twitter, or you can go to dgendata.io. And then if you're interested in learning more about options, you can go to gvol.io. That's gvol.io. And our Twitter handle is GenesisVol. So yeah, check it out. Feel free. Our DMs and are always open. So feel free to hit us up with questions or ideas or things. Like, we love hearing that stuff. So
awesome, man. Awesome. Pat, thanks so much for coming on and looking forward to our next chat. Hey, everyone. Stay tuned for more episodes of the Zima Red podcast. And subscribe to the Zima Red newsletter for more info on all things NFTs. Thanks so much for listening.